Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome along to another edition of Kicking It. We are so honored to have with us Dallas Mavericks legend, NBA Hall of Famer, Dirk Nowitzki. It's good to see you.
Thanks for having
me. Thank you for being here.
Excited.
We're in Dallas. One. We had to ask if you'd be available. Yes. And we appreciate you making the time. Die wollen auch unbedingt, dass ich mit der auf Deutsch rede, weil das, die das irgendwie voll cool finden.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we do here, right?
Ich wusste nicht, dass du Deutsch sprichst.
Ja, ich war 8 Jahre lang in Deutschland.
Wo da?
München, Berlin.
Wow.
Beiden Städte, ja.
Scheiße.
wow.
Yes,
cool.
Thank you. Was it all right? Did
it's
I get
good.
A decent
very
rating?
Good. Yeah,
okay,
very
cool.
Good.
I guess what's super interesting to me thinking about having you onto this show was the fact that we've got you, we've got Clint, right? So the best European player to ever play the game in terms of basketball, the best American player to ever play the game in terms of soccer. It's a fact,
I'm
man.
Not,
you're
going to
be a fake one. What about Landon Donovan?
I don't got a
Donovan?
Statue.
Not yet.
I'm never going to have a statue that comes up like that, okay? There's levels.
Is that how you feel?
I mean, incredible what he's done. I mean, hopefully one day we'll have American players that are doing well enough and big clubs in Europe that have like a statue after him. I mean, that's the equivalent to me of what he's done. Come to America where, you know, we've been the best at this game for so long to have people like him from Europe come over and take over. I mean, that's the goal, if we can have Americans do that one day in Europe.
Wait, so you got Hall of Fame, then you also got a statue.
Bro.
You got a statue.
That's crazy.
I mean, that hits a little bit different. You got a statue.
It's not like the Cristiano Ronaldo statue.
You got
either.
A
it's
statue.
Like,
right?
Yeah,
that
fade away.
Right. There's been some bad statues.
I was a little worried. I was a little worried.
Bro.
I was a little worried, I gotta say.
What means more to you, right? Like, because playing for the same team throughout your entire career and them to honor you in that way, to you be like embedded in this city, like, what's more?
Yeah, I'm not even really sure. I mean, everything has been fantastic in retirement. It's been like this retirement tour of stuff happening every 6 months. I'm getting honored somewhere else. It's been wonderful, and for my family and I. But it started off with the street. I mean, now I have a street in front of the arena.
Oh,
that was super cool. So now I take my kids to the game. I'm like, take a ride on Nowitzki Way.
you got a key to the city. You got a day or a week. Well, you got everything, huh?
So it's been wonderful. It's hard to say one thing is cooler than the next. The statue obviously is amazing. That will live forever. But it's been super cool moments. And of course, I didn't really know what to expect when I got here, late 90s. And then 20-some years later now to drive on my street and, you know, see my jersey retired and the statue, it still feels somewhat surreal as a kid leaving Germany 20-something years ago. But it's been a wonderful journey, and I'll try to make the best out of it.
How did you know kind of when it was time, like, you know what, I've done enough, I'm proud with what I've accomplished? Was it like your body telling you, or did you already kind of have in your mind, or was it like man, I got to be around for my kids more, my family, or...
I think my body told me I had some issues there at the end of my ankle, which is actually really bad now. Obviously, 21 years of running up and down and jumping on the hardwood. I have some arthritis and some joints. So my last year was super tough. I missed the first 30 games. I had some stuff in my ankle, and then it took me forever to come back, but then it just wasn't the same. Even my last 2 years, I mean, when I was in the game, I just see that point guard just laughing, just call whoever I was guarding, just call him up, just put him straight in the pick and roll and just feast, coming at me 100 miles an hour. I'm like with one ankle trying to stay in front. I was like, okay, first I can't keep up. My health is not there. And I'm like, I think mentally I could have played another year, but it would have made no sense. And
when you say, sorry, just to think about having your jersey retired, right, your number retired, if you think about the football equivalent of that, it's crazy, right? You've got Napoli with Maradona, you'd have Ajax and Johan Cruyff, you'd have AC Milan and Paolo Maldini, you'd have Liberia and George Weah. Like, these are incredible names in the game. Can you think of a bigger honor than somebody saying, hey, you were so important to our franchise that we're gonna retire your number?
A statue like Thierry Henry, I mean, there's no bigger honor than to say that you were here, you dominated, you brought so much joy to the sport, to this club, and you'll be remembered forever. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, that's not your intentions going out. You want to do well, and you want to make your family proud and be a kid as long as you can by playing the game you love, but to be able to get to those heights, man, that's the
number retiring is just like, it hits different. It hits different because it's basically them saying no one can ever replace you.
There will never be another you. Yeah.
You can never, ever be replaced. Like, this number, it doesn't matter whoever wears this again, it can never be you. Like, that to me is like, that's heavy.
That's cool, yeah.
That's a cool. dope.
Something we'll never feel.
Oh, we gotta live vicariously through.
Yeah, man, dude, it's a great feeling, right?
Post career, like, you had a chance to travel. Did those travels take you to London? Get a chance to see Arsenal games or anything like that?
I did. I did see an Arsenal game finally when Uzi was still there. Yeah. The other Germans had left, Podolski and Mertesacker and all these guys. But I saw him. Actually, I saw Thierry there, and I think we were sitting in his box that night and. It was good. It was fun. It was good to be there. And I think they beat Man U that day. So it was a good all the way around.
That's her team.
Too many Arsenal fans here again. Too many Arsenal fans in the mix.
Hear, hear.
I mean, you mentioned Thierry. You also mentioned Podolski, Schweinsteiger, so Bayern Munich guys as well. Obviously, Arsenal play Bayern. Quarterfinals of the Champions League. Who do you pull for in that situation? Because you say you identify with both clubs, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, growing up, I didn't really have one team. You know, my dad didn't really have one team, so we kind of hopped around. We were situated. We didn't have a first Bundesliga team, so... Frankfurt was close, Nuremberg was close, Munich was 2 hours away. So I kind of like identify with the entire area. Mm-hmm. I used to go to games everywhere. So I don't really have one team, but I do like Bayern over the years now. I met most of these players and Müller and Neuer and I mean, all these guys. So I think I'm going to have to pull for Bayern.
Bayern.
I mean,
it's jumping ship, boys.
No, I'm not jumping ship. I grew up in Germany, right?
Sure.
I grew up in Germany.
That one hits different.
Yeah. But I do like Arsenal when they play, obviously, in the Prem. It started with the Invincibles a long time ago. But we didn't really catch that much Premier League. It was all Bundesliga in Germany growing up. But Invincibles had a fun team to watch. And then my wife's twin brothers play soccer, and they played in the Prem. So every weekend we would watch the Prem. They played in Swansea and Blackburn and... Who else? Norwich.
I played against both of them.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good guys.
Yeah, so then we were like obsessed watching Prem every weekend. And then we
lost Steve Nash
touch.
Is a Spurs guy, right? Who obviously you're
He's
cool
a Spurs
with.
Guy.
How did that
friend.
Go with the two of you?
Yeah, we text every now and then when they play. Uh-huh. Might put a little friendly wager
North
on.
London rivalry.
Yeah, exactly. But Tottenham was getting the better out of the last few years, but Arsenal now turned the corner again. So yeah, it's been fun talking a lot of trash to him. Yeah, he's definitely diehard Spurs. And that's what me and Steve actually originally connected when I first got here in 98, 99. We had, you know, he had European roots with his parents and, you know, he loves soccer. So it gave us, I think, something to talk about, something to bond over. And then I'd go over to his place. We'd watch some soccer whenever we can catch it. And so that's how really our friendship really started, was over talking soccer.
Steve is pretty nice too, isn't he?
Yeah,
Steve can play.
Good, yeah, he can play.
He's a sick athlete. No matter, he's one of those annoying guys, whatever he
does.
Just
does everything.
Do you ever play in those? Doesn't he put on regular charity games?
Yeah.
Right? Do you ever play in those?
I played in his in New York 1 year.
Do you get picked? Everybody wants Dirk on their team?
Yeah, I was the last pick, I think. I was the last pick, and then I didn't score. I missed a couple, and then I was so thirsty at the end. I shot it every time, and then they called me. I was like, stop, play for the team. But I just wanted to score a game and a goal in his game. And I went home with a bagel, and I think we lost. I was all the way tough, all around tough.
That sounds like very familiar to someone else I know.
You were thirsty in the game?
Oh, bruh.
What are you talking about?
He's thirsty in everything.
What you talking about, bruh?
The missed chances. I want to just keep shooting. Yeah, I was like, damn, I've heard that somewhere before.
Going home with a bagel.
I'm not going home with no bagel. I'll tell you that right now.
Wait, but so Steve is he's a part owner of Vancouver. There's been a lot of influx of athletes, you know, looking at soccer as an investment. Investing in different teams, whether it's in MLS teams or in Europe. Is that on your radar at all? Anything that you're interested in?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if that's something comes up and it's the right situation, sure, yeah. I'm, like I said, always interested in soccer.
Yeah.
I don't really understand the whole, you know, investment world and all the numbers. I invest with people that I like, that are trustworthy. And so if something, you know, ever should happen that comes along and it's a great fit for me, then yeah, why not?
One question, would you invest in his rap career after hearing it? Yeah.
That's a pass.
Hey, come on, hey, man.
And for that, I'm out.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Take you a minute to feel like you belonged. Did you feel like you really had to earn that?
Yeah, I mean, it was hard at the beginning. You know, I got here, I've always lived at home, and then, you know, get thrown into that. Didn't know what to expect. Now there was no social media, there was no internet. I had no idea what I was walking into here. And so it took a while for me to get adjusted. My school English was horrible, so I didn't really, it was a language barrier.
You weren't good at school?
I went to school.
No, I said you weren't good at school.
No, I mean, I was. let's talk about something.
Okay.
My English wasn't, it was more we learned like Oxford English, so
right.
Proper
British English. Yes.
And so I came here, I didn't understand a word what was happening. And so there was the language barrier, there was culture differences, and then the style of play, which is so different. I mean, these guys were athletes and running, and I'm like, we used to play like once a week, and I came, we played 4 or 5 games a week. I mean, the whole thing was just a lot at the beginning for a 19, 20-year-old to take in. And it really took me like a whole year to kind of get the routine, have a full training camp and feel welcome here, get a house, get a car, and just get situated.
I mean, I think you're the best international player to come over here to the States and like...
Appreciate it. There's a lot of guys coming now.
But to me, I'm just curious, like, when you grew up in Germany, like, how was that development? And was it kind of weird for you? Because growing up in the States, like playing soccer in the States, everybody always looked at me like, bruh, like why aren't you playing basketball, baseball, or football? Did you kind of get looks like that growing up around your friends and stuff?
You know, they obviously saw that I was super freakishly tall. And, you know, the kind of basketball sort of came easy to me. So I played tennis and a little handball. You know, people don't really know handball here, but it's a great sport. In Europe, it's big. And so I played those two sports. And then I was just getting too tall for tennis. And I don't know, I was always shy. So people made fun of my height. And I just felt comfortable around the basketball guys. They were all my size. And nobody asked me, how's the air up there? And all that all that nonsense that you don't want to hear when you're 13, 14 years old. And so, yeah, it wasn't really a huge sport in Germany at the time. Obviously, everything is soccer. And tennis was big at the time with Steffi Graf, Boris Becker. But basketball was sort of flying under the radar, but there were some good clubs and some good teams.
Did you have to pay to be a part of those clubs? Like in the States, growing up, you have to pay to be a part of it. It's like a pay-to-play kind of system. It's just now that we're kind of seeing what they're doing in Europe with, like, whether it's MLS teams, and then now they're having academies and they're starting to pick up that bill for those kids and give them the opportunity, if you're good enough to play, that you can play. What was that like?
Yeah, you had to join the club. Your parents had to pick that up. And I'm not sure if back in the days there were some exceptions they made. I can't really remember. But no, you had to join the club with your annual fees, and then you were able to play really any sport that you wanted inside the club, if the club offered that sport. And so I played actually handball and tennis at a different club, but they didn't offer a junior basketball program, so we had to join another club for basketball.
Did you ever play any football? Because 4 years before, they win the World Cup, Franz Beckenbauer, you're born in 78.
Yeah.
It feels like you're coming into a Germany that's all about the game.
Booming.
Like, were you interested in the sport at all?
I was super interested, and I loved it, and I watched it growing up. Just with size 16 shoes.
They didn't try to
win nets. You could have been a goalie.
I could have. I wasn't the most coordinated. And everybody in Germany kicks on the street and in recess. You take a little ball and you kick to each other. So, I mean, I kicked it a little bit, but I never actually joined the club and was like, I'm going to try to do this sport. It was just too hard for me. I didn't really have the coordination for it, my long legs. So that was a sport that was actually, I was struggling at. But kicking on the street, kicking with friends was definitely decent enough. I can keep it up maybe 10 times in a row.
Hey, that's good. It's more than Mo.
Yeah.
Y'all mad at me when I'm not here. You heal me when I'm here. We missed you, bro. But you know, getting back to what Clint was talking about, when you retired, did you almost like become an ambassador for the NBA in terms of like when foreign players are having interest to come over? Are they reaching out to you like, hey, what's it like? What's the transition like? You know, what should I expect when I get my feet on the ground here, and how can I hit the ground and run? You know what I mean?
They don't really. You know, nowadays, I think these kids are different, as you know, with social media. They just come here with a different swag already that I didn't have back in the days. But they come in, they know what to expect, and they've seen all these clips on social media and the internet and YouTube and God knows what. I played with Luka. My last year was his first year, and he barely asked me any questions. He was already so savvy. I mean, he's been a pro since he's like 12 years old in Madrid, and he just knew how to handle himself and play, and he plays way smarter than his age. So
I feel like you broke down so many barriers that like they don't have to break down. Like, you earned so much respect that they're like, okay, we can respect more of foreign players coming in. Because, you know, when you came in, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but did it almost feel like, all right, let's see what this international player can do, you know? That's kind of how I felt.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't be as good as another, English player. I had to be better. Like, there had to be a significant difference for me to play over them. Did you feel any of that?
Yeah, I mean, there were some that made it, obviously, in the 90s with Schrempf, and, you know, there are some other European legends, Kukoc and Divac, and all these guys sort of little paved the way for me. And then when I came in, I mean, I heard those noises when I was guarding somebody in my rookie year in front of the opposing bench. You're like, go, Adam, he's soft. Oh. I mean, I hear all that stuff. But
that's what, you know, I do in training with big guys.
Was that the impression, was that the kind of like the judgment on European players that they were soft?
Yeah, they come in shooting jumpers and playing facing the basket. They don't want to go underneath and mix it up. And so that was the, you know, the reputation we had, that they're a little softer, which is fine. There still are. Most of the international players are facing the basket. They're skilled. They can dribble. They can shoot. They can bring the ball up. So there wasn't really the physically overpowering, and that's why they were a little soft.
Did you care about fitting in culturally? You know how, like, swag and style is a big part of NBA culture, right? What is everybody walking into the arena in, all of that? Did you care about any of that stuff? Here you come from Germany, and it's all hip-hop culture and all of that. Did you feel like you fitted, and did you want to fit?
I mean, I was a little 90s hip-hop guy, you know? I had the little white pants going and a little, the white shirts, and I had all that. And but, yeah, back in the day, at the beginning, we didn't have a dress code, so anything. I just usually had a pair of jeans and just something leger on, and some guys made statements, some guys didn't care at all, and then it got a little too loose there when AI had about 18 chains on and his throwback jerseys, and then actually David Stern stepped in and was like, okay, this is getting out of control, it's getting out of hand, we need to do something. And then came the dress code, and then you know, we had to wear suits or at least slacks and button down to every game, and that was really the first time I had to own a suit and some nice clothes. Before, it was all baggy jeans and sweatsuits. And
Baggy back then.
The suits were baggy, yeah. I still have some just to laugh at them, looking at them.
Did you ever get caught in a game? Because you seem, you know, super humble, quiet, but were you like, you know what, I'm gonna start talking some trash? Did anyone get that out of you?
There is, yeah, over the 21 years it happens, you know, there are in emotional moments. But it's usually not me starting, something must have happened, yeah. Or, you know, somebody, I felt like I got fouled, and then I talk to the ref, and then he gets in, like, stop whining, or you're soft, or something like that. And then, okay, let's have a conversation. Right, yeah, we can do that.
Was there a player that actually, you know, that you knew that was coming every time? Like
Kevin Garnett was
Kevin Garnett.
Oh, yeah. I mean, his reputation, he's got their reputation, but it's actually true. I mean, he was one of a kind. He was always just so fired up. And you know, he always wanted to make his mark especially against the player that he was competing against at the four spot. So, I mean, there was a night when I first got in the league and we played in Minnesota. And I just come and walk on the court. I'm like, wow, that's KG. And he's just like, I'm busting. I'm like, okay. I just wanted to shake his hand. And then I don't think we ever shook hands pregame. He's just that intense. He didn't want to even show you any weakness. Wow. So that's just who KG was. One time we played him. I think he was in Boston at that time. He was so rattled. I had scored a few. So there was a timeout. I'm getting up from my timeout. He's all the way. He had left his timeout early and was standing outside our huddle just waiting on me. As soon as I got up, he's everywhere I walked, he followed me with his nose on my nose. I'm like, this guy is just crazy. He wanted to pick me up as soon as I left the huddle. And I mean, he was one of a kind, but, you know, his will to compete was just one of the best ever. So he's
I'm a Celtics guy, so I like hearing that.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
Hey, can we talk about Hall of Fame? Because you got inducted 2023. You got inducted 2021, I think.
2022.
Yeah. My bad. Apologies. Yeah, nice. So I watched both of your speeches over the last couple of days. You seem very put together, bro. You were emotional.
I was emotional.
Where's the soccer Hall of Fame?
It's here. It's in Dallas.
Oh, yeah. Shoot, cut that out. I should probably know this.
But I was emotional because, like, my grandparents were there. They're in their 90s. I mean, they could be the last time.
Of course, it's in the Dallas Stadium.
Now you remember.
I've been in it. Of course, I've been in it. Yeah, of course.
It was a special moment. You know what I mean? You had all your family there. Your kids were there. All the people that helped you along the way. I was in Texas, and I think just having all the people that were in the struggle with me to like chase my dream is like thanking them for that moment and sharing that. So it was hard to dang. Keep the tears back a little bit. And once you get going, it's like,
are you trying not to make eye contact? Because, you know, if I look at you, I'm going to crack. Or were you trying to honor them in that moment?
I tried, but it didn't last long. And then it just, I could never get right. Like, it was bad. But, hey, it was from the heart. And I'm glad it's over with. I mean, you feel the pressure when you're giving a speech because it's like, you want to thank everybody. You don't want to leave anybody out. You want to look back and say, you know what, I did a good job with that. Like, did you feel the pressure when you gave your speech?
Oh, I was nervous for weeks. Yeah, I mean, all summer long, I knew when the date was. And
man, you hit that very well.
Well, you know, I practiced a while, and I think I was so focused, and I kind of knew what I wanted to say. I had no time to get emotional because I was so into
locked
my
in.
Speech, and I wanted to make sure. I had to breathe a little bit when it got to my parents and family. Then it got a little dicey, but I was, you know, the yoga breathing every now and then. There's some deep breaths. I think that helped. But I got through it pretty good. But I had a, you know, when you have a plan in mind, and then we had a little teleprompter too, so that helped me keep in my thoughts. Yeah. So. Don't show that, but we were definitely cheating, and I can keep my thoughts together, and so that definitely helped.
You obviously mentioned like some of the buy-in players that you've gotten to know over the years. Are athletes, or do you feel like soccer players move really different to basketball players?
No, at the end of the day, I think athletes have respect for each other, and you know they all know the grind, they know what people go through, and so there's mutual respect there, and. There is relationships there when the opportunity is there. So
there's a weird story that at your bachelor party, which was in Las Vegas, I believe, Wayne Rooney.
Who told you all that?
Was that I don't. Hey,
where's the lead?
Hey, what happened there? What happened at that bachelor party in Vegas, man?
Wow,
we got researchers.
So
out here,
Rooney
man.
Just happened to be in the club, or did you say what's up?
I'm not sure if. This was already at a later stage at that point of the night. I can't remember if we went over there and took a photo. And obviously all my U.S. guys are like, who is that?
I was like, you recognize him immediately?
Yeah. Was that pre-hair plugs? I can't.
It must have been.
I can't remember.
Why you went there?
I can't remember.
Oh man, Wayne took her straight.
2 foot.
No, we'll take that out. We'll take that out.
What was it like for you to hold your country's flag at the Olympics? Because that's where I initially met you. You getting to represent your country at the Olympics and hoist the flag.
It was always a dream of mine, you know, growing up watching the Olympics, you know, 88, 92, Barcelona, dream team. It was a dream of mine to represent Germany one time, and then we never made it. We didn't make it to Sydney in 2000. We didn't make Athens in 2004. And so when we made it in 08 to Beijing, it was like, this is actually some of the most emotional I've become in my career. It was that moment when we made it. And then, you know, it was just everything I ever dreamed of, sleeping in a village, you know, getting to know all these athletes.
Is what they say about the Olympic Village true, that it's kind of like a big hookup zone?
I don't remember that.
What do you guys remember?
That's a brand new question.
I remember our coach, we came in, our
what
coach
kind of
said,
question?
Me out.
What kind of question is that?
I've always just been intrigued. Yeah. There's something they say about the Olympic Village,
we had fun. We had fun.
I've never got to go.
We were doing like, I'll see what's going on. Nah, they took us out the village.
We literally like came in, our coach was like, The Swedish girls team was in our dorm, and the Brazilian volleyball team was the next, and our coach went, nope. 2 hours, we're out. Find us a hotel.
It was Sweden right next to it. At the time I was playing in Toronto, you were in Sweden, and I don't know, he just said, yeah, we're not staying here.
Took us we're out.
He said, yeah, we're gone.
What was that party like after you won? You finally got the championship? Because it felt like that was talked about
The first night in Miami was cool. I mean, you know, we had Lil Wayne in the club, and I'm like, yeah, Lil Wayne, what's up? So that was super cool. And Cubes bought a freaking champagne bottle. It was like this high for like $100,000. And so everybody had to like shoot out of that champagne bottle. The first night was epic. And I got to say, we were an older team. You know, we were most of our starting fives, and then a couple of guys on the bench, we were all over 30. We were completely drained after. We were so tired. You know, I think we partied a little harder in 06 after the initial disappointment. We partied to make forget what we did, that we lost the final, than we actually did when we won. I don't know. Guys were old. Guys had families at this point. You know, we had a couple good nights, but not really what you would envision after putting in 10 plus years and then finally getting to the top.
What do you like in the club? I can't imagine Clint in the club. What you like?
So, I don't know, it depends, you know? You don't know what you're gonna get, like a box of chocolates. So, I mean.
You dance, you move, or you kind of like you standing
I mean,
at the
you
bar?
Know, I just stay, you know, to the
stay
basics,
the
you know.
A little two-step.
Two-step, but you know what I mean? I'm out there pop locking, dropping and stanky legging like my buddy.
Stanky legging.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Going back to Germany and international, kind of talking about Olympics, how much do you follow the international game? How much do you follow Germany or the U.S. for that matter?
Euros this summer
in Germany.
Will you go to any games?
I'm going to try mid-June. I think the first game is in Frankfurt. Then they actually have a game on my birthday on the 19th. I think that one's in Stuttgart. I'm going to try to catch one of those in June, but... Yeah, I still follow all the time. I mean, the big tournaments everybody follows in Germany, you know, the Euros, the World Cup, obviously. I'm trying to catch as many games as I can. And now that we have the World Cup here in 26 in Dallas, Texas, so looking forward to that.
But you were a part of bringing games to Dallas, right? You campaigned for that.
Yeah, they asked me a few years ago whether I want to be involved and kind of sort of be an ambassador a little bit, if you will, and for Dallas sports and for this Metroplex and bringing some games here. I said, sure. I love soccer. I love the World Cup growing up, and that was a natural fit. And then I went out to the announcement the other day, a couple weeks ago, where we took a little bit of disappointment when we
losing out in the final.
Yeah, losing
to
out
to New
in the
Jersey
final.
As well.
Yeah, so we were.
I'll
all
take
there.
It.
Jerry Jones was there. All the mayors from all the towns were there, and we were standing there like this. And then they announced Dallas got the most games with 9 games, and I'm like, that doesn't really sound good. And then, sure enough, a couple minutes later, they said we didn't get the final.
We tend to have a tradition on this show that kind of. We talk about adversity and some of the toughest moments of your career or life. What was that for you?
Charlie took such a pivot there.
Yeah, bro.
I didn't know where you're going with that either. But
you were we have a tradition on this show.
What just happened right now?
Call Charlie Dr. Phil.
I think the hardest years for me were 06 and 07. 06, we were up 2-0 in Miami in the finals and went down there and all wheels came off. We ended up losing the final series 4-2. That was Dwayne Wade's coming out party back in the days. This is where, you know, he made his career and started from there. And then the next year, my MVP year, 07, we won like 68 games. We were heavy favorites to win it all. And we run into the Warriors, hot team back in the days, and we lose in the first round my MVP year. So those two back-to-back years were, man, I took that hard. I took that. I was embarrassed. I felt like I let the whole city down, the fans, my teammates. And so I took that very hard. I was embarrassed. I didn't want to leave the house for a couple weeks. So those were probably my low points of my career.
Is that what made it hard to get past Trinidad and Tobago? Because you didn't have that opportunity to reorient yourself, right? Because you know, okay, this is it for me, essentially, World Cup career. I probably don't have another shot at this.
Yeah, I mean, it was towards the end, right? My goal was to try to make it to the 2018 World Cup and then kind of retire after that. And then, And we weren't able to get that accomplished. So once the team didn't qualify, it was kind of like a rebuilding phase. They got rid of Bruce. They had an interim coach in, and they were focusing on the youth and developing them for the future. And like I talked about, it had been nice to have another game after all the years of service. Not a send-off game, but just one more game to be back in the States to say, you know, that was my last game in my memory, as opposed to one of the biggest failures of U.S. soccer's history in terms of not qualifying for the World Cup. But
do you relate to what Dirk's saying when he said, I didn't want to go out the house, I didn't want to show my face?
A little bit, but you couldn't. Like, you know, you feel that way, but it's like you still had the season to go, right? And we ended up still getting to the finals, and then we lost the finals that year, too. So it's like, damn, bro, like the double whammy.
Was that enough adversity talk for you? Can we go back to normal programming?
Yeah, we're good.
I know what I wanted to say. I never got the chance to thank you. There was a retirement video that was done by Seattle, and you were on there, and, you know, you had some nice things to say about my career, so I always appreciate that. So,
wait, how did that connection come? Why were you on his retirement video?
That's a good question. Why did I?
Probably someone reached out to him, and he's like, who's that? And he's like, all right, fuck it. Hey, Clint, hey, great career, man. Hope you enjoy retirement. Kobe was on that as well. You know, may you rest in peace. And yeah. It was special. You know, I wouldn't think that y'all would really know about, like, what was going on, I guess, with my career. So it made me feel good. So I appreciate that.
No, you're welcome.
What are your memories of playing against Kobe? To what extent did you consider him a rival?
So, you know, it wasn't real. I never made a big secret. I was a big Kobe fan, even while we played against each other. Felt like how he approached the game. To me, he was the complete package. You know, he had the killer instinct, he had the athleticism, he had the skill level. So to me, he embodied everything that you need to be a dominant force. He was a complete package, and I got to know him a little bit in the All-Star games, and just treated me really well. And I think there was some mutual respect there. So I was a big fan. And, of course, there was a tragedy. And, you know, I still think about him all the time. I watch clips all the time. And he was just a great, great player.
Do you sit and watch YouTube clips?
Every now and then, yeah. When something comes to my mind. Or, I mean, we played him one time. I do have to talk about that all the time. We played in L.A. one time. This was 06, maybe, I want to say. And he had one of those heater nights. I mean, he just couldn't miss. And so he scored, I want to say, 63 or 62 in three quarters. And we as a team scored 61. So he had outscored our entire team by himself. I mean, he had everything going. Floaters, one on three in transition. He shot a three left-handed. He was kind of stuck in the corner. He turned around, shot a three left-handed. We're like, come on. Turn around, whap, bottoms. I'm like, it was that kind of night.
Where does he rank for you?
I mean, I'm a Jordan guy. But to me, he's the closest thing we ever has gotten to see to MJ. It's just the way he played. Same grit, the same killer instinct. So to me, he's right there with MJ. You know, if I look at the two guards, and it will always be Kobe and MJ.
I gotta ask you, because this is the time that I love to ask players.
Yeah, have a sip, because we don't know. Yeah, we never know what's coming next.
Yeah. You know what's about to be said.
You get the opportunity to play against MJ. Mm. Like, I asked Steve, what was that moment? You come on the court, you're playing against MJ. Your first moment playing against Michael Jordan.
That's actually funny story.
What happened?
We were in Washington, and I got to play him, and it was so cool. Actually, he guarded me a couple times on the block. I'm trying to give him every move I had in my head. I'm like spinning, like behind the back, and I was just super hyped. It was just, you know, watching him in the game, how he acts, how he calls over the ref and just cussing him out because he's just learning stuff and just watching him, how he acts on the court was just, it was amazing.
Similar question, but soccer, Messi, Ronaldo, where do you sit on that debate?
I know that's a heated one, huh, for everyone. I'm a Messi guy.
Hey.
I'm a Messi guy. I don't know how he carries himself, how he plays. He's a little, super quick, super fast. Ronaldo to me, the shirt off, and the hey, look at me. It's just not my style. It's not my style. Messi to me is way more low key, and that I could identify more with that. But that's, I don't want to take anything away from Ronaldo. This is just a personal, you know, opinion. What about you guys?
How about, I want to ask you.
I want to hear that first.
Okay. Messi's more of a complete player, but I do have a soft spot.
He likes the shirt off.
I don't like that, but hey, you can't deny what he did.
Oh, for
Man
sure.
United and Real Madrid.
Who have you all played against?
Can't go wrong.
I played against both.
You did? Yep. Played against?
Messi.
If we're talking about international football, Germany always just strikes me as a team that comes different when it comes to tournaments. It's just, there's such a strong mentality
around
them. Especially
like penalties, like having that mentality of like, we're going to win. We're prepared. Like, how they do in penalty shootouts over, like, history has been, would y'all say, like, one of the top teams?
I mean, I agree with you. There's just a certain
aura.
Aura that even like German clubs in Champions League, like Bayern Munich, despite whatever's happening in the league, it's a draw that you're kind of like, I don't know if I want to. Like for Arsenal.
Oh, you didn't want Bayern?
I don't know, because I'm going back on my words now. I didn't want them because there's that aura around them, right? There's just like that pedigree that's attached to them. They know how to succeed in tournaments.
How many World Cups have they won internationally? Germany?
I think three. Three or four.
14.
54, 74,
90, 14. 14.
Yeah,
14. 14. See, they, man, bro. You know your stuff, I ain't gonna lie. He's pretty good. Well, how many Champions League has Bayern Munich won? Do you know that one?
All these pop quiz questions.
Hey, come on, man. I'm trying to test you. I don't know.
He's not testing you.
Is it three?
Yeah, it's like, hey, I'm just asking Google.
Is it three or four? I don't care. I don't know.
You don't need to answer these questions. This guy's just throwing shit up.
I'm impressed.
But you know, it's actually funny. Germany, after 2014, we haven't gotten our stuff together the last 10 years. It's been 10 years now. I don't know if we kept the team together too long, and we missed, you know, sprinkling in the new guys, or maybe they were over Yogi Löw. I'm not quite sure what's happening.
I think it's like overcoaching, not maybe giving them like more of that free-flowing style.
Yeah, I have no idea. But now we changed coaches. Now I don't know. We haven't looked good. So people are a little worried for the Euro Cup and at home,
especially hosting it. Yeah,
because we got the talent. Yeah. Musiala and all these guys. We got good players. It's just we haven't been able to.
Do you rate Nagelsmann?
Put a good product out, huh?
Do you rate Nagelsmann?
Do you not? Feels like a loaded question.
Yeah.
Do I not rate Nagelsmann? I think he's still unproven. I think when you get the international job at Germany, the pressure's on, especially home, to win. And for him, you get sacked from Bayern. I don't think he should have been sacked from Bayern. He hadn't lost a Champions League match. Yeah. I think he was 15 games unbeaten at that point, and they sacked him because of his style, apparently, and the way he was communicating. But I don't know if he's the right guy for this German side.
How do you feel?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess the jury's still out. But
if they offered you Jurgen Klopp or Julian Nagelsmann, who would you go for?
I mean, Klopp was my guy.
Yeah.
That's no disrespect to Nagelsmann, but Klopp is my guy. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. And there's rumors that he actually is going to take over the German national team.
Okay.
Yeah. Which would be interesting. And then it's obviously not a full-time job. Maybe he can relax a little bit more with his family, and then. So there's that rumor, but who knows? I mean, and it's actually sad to see him leave Liverpool now. Used to love him in Dortmund. Just his style. He's so invested. He's a player's coach. Players love him. And so, yeah.
He's going to be missed for sure in the game. Mm-hmm.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
After accomplishing everything that you've done, seems like you've done everything. Like, what is like your passions now? What's your side quest? What's the stuff you're getting into?
So I love tennis. So I play a lot of tennis now. And then we do travel a lot since, you know, we travel the world without really seeing much. So it's always focused, always, you know, can't even go to a museum the day before the game. I don't want to walk around for 2 hours, take my legs away. And so now I enjoy like being a tourist all over the world. We have three young children. We travel the world. We go to Africa. We go to Europe all the time. And we just do fun trips. Went to Australia last year for 6 weeks with the kids. So I don't know. I want to show them the world. I want them to.
Are they into sports?
They do sports. They play tennis. The boys play a little soccer. My daughter does gymnastics too. And so, but mostly they all do tennis. They love it.
How do you find traveling with kids? Because Clint's got six of them, and they can't.
His travel is way different than mine. I'm falling on a budget, okay?
You got six kids?
Yeah. I got fixed. There's no more. We figured out what the problem was.
But real talk, you don't want to go anywhere unless you can drive that pretty much,
pretty
right?
Much, because pretty otherwise. Much. It's just so much to carry, whether it's car seats, stroller, you know, you actually have to carry them. Like, it's.
What
it's
ages
so much.
You got going?
Pick an age. It's probably one of them. It's 15, 13, 11, 8, 3, and 1. Three boys, three girls. So, yeah. I can't even imagine doing a trip to Australia, how long of a flight that would be on, and then getting there, and how am I going to keep them alive with all this, like, crocodiles, spiders, and everything that's there. It's like, no way.
No, at three, I was like, okay, this is... The third one was born right at the beginning of the season, November, and then so the entire season. I was like, you know, short nights, and I'm like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine having six. There's just no way.
You built different.
How important do you think your wife has been to your career?
So we met, so she thinks I owe her the championship. So we met, of course, we met in 2009, 2010. And then we won the championship, obviously, a year after that. So then we got married in 2012. So we've been married over 10 years already. Time flies. But yeah, I mean, I always had a small circle, but the circle was always, 100% behind me. And it's obviously wifey, kids, and my family in Germany, and my coach, my mentor, that was always there for everything I needed.
Mm. Sounds weird, right? But do you think she gave you street cred, like being a woman of color?
I do get that at times, and then I started to come with, with the to go play with the foil over into every game.
He's so invited to the cookout.
I still get those on Twitter every now and then. Somebody brings it back. Oh, here he goes. Dirk is with his to go plate. I did get.
What was in the plate? What would she give you?
I was just basically healthy food. At the end of my career, I wanted to eat healthy. I wanted to know exactly what was in my food, and so. It was really just healthy food. It wasn't like I was carrying a bunch of ribs and
mac and cheese, and collard greens,
or whatever you say. No, it was just healthy stuff that I knew what the stuff was and what it was cooked with. And looking back now, I probably should have had somebody else carry it in, or I don't know. But it's at the time, it's just what I did.
Do you have any interest in coaching?
Team wise, I don't think so. Dealing with all these personalities, holding speeches, motivating guys, it's just not my thing. Like, what my coach has done with me, like a individual coach, shooting coach, I can see that. If I find, like, some young guy that wants to learn how to play, how to shoot, I think that could be a super fun project. Take him on, show him everything that I know, passing on the knowledge I gained over 20 years. I think that's...
What about front office?
Front office is a grind. I always thought I'm going to go right in the management when I'm done, and then just being around last year, it's a full-time job. I mean, it's no breaks. You get calls on Christmas. You travel all the time. And now that we still have young kids, I'm actually in a good place right now. I'm my own boss. I can do what I want. I can go in the office when I want. We still have some charity. I have a foundation in Germany, a foundation here. I'm on the board of FIBA, which is the same as FIFA, just for basketball, that sits in Switzerland. So I go to Switzerland a couple times a year. So I always thought I'm going to go. It's a no-brainer. As soon as I'm done, I'll be in management, learning that, maybe assistant GM, kind of learning the ropes. Now that I've been away from the game a couple of years, I'm like, this is actually pretty nice, having time with the kids, being there every weekend with soccer games, tennis. No stress, no drama, no agents calling me that you don't want to deal with anyways. The agents are the worst.
Do your kids struggle with the pressure of being your kids?
I think they're still a little young for that. My daughter is 10, 11 now. She understands a little bit. The boys couldn't care less. They're doing their own thing. They're 7 and 9, and they're loving sports. My daughter understands it a little bit. I'm not sure, but she'll never play basketball. She's more into tennis. Okay. Maybe she can, you know, find her own path there. And she doesn't really love, she doesn't like the attention at all. When we go out somewhere, people want to take photos, she just rolls her eyes, walks away. She can't stand. The boys think it's super cool. And
they jump in the picture with you?
Yeah. And Malika hates it. So they're just different personalities. But yeah, we'll see what they make out of their journey. My parents always supported whatever I wanted to do. When I started basketball, they weren't huge fans, but they're like, sure, go ahead. I wanted to play handball, tennis. So I kind of want to do the same. I don't want to force them to do anything. If they want to do gymnastics, she does some track and field, try everything. And then just tell me what you like most, what your passion is, and then you'll find your own way. But I'm not going to push them into anything. You know, they can make their own path.
Mm-hmm. I know we have to wrap, but before we do, on the table for you, if you'd ever like to go to a Champions League game, we're very happy to hook you up. If you want to go and see Arsenal lose to Bayern, tickets are on us.
Sweet.
She's doing. I thought you were about to say something else.
No.
I thought you were going to say the offer's on the table if you ever want to hear my track, because you looked at me.
No.
I was like, damn.
Yeah, so Champions League, anything you ever need.
Oh, sweet.
Got
Thank you.
I can host you, you know, so I can take you over, make sure
you have to. Yeah, somebody has to.
You know, I have to help you out, you know, be the facilitator. I got
you. Hey, they ain't going to give you no credit. Mo can barely get a credential to the conversation.
It's wild. Rough times. Hard times.
We do appreciate you coming through and making the time for us in your hometown. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so fun.
God bless you. Can I give you a hug?
Thank you. Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. So fun. Nice to meet you guys.
Good to meet you, bro. Yeah.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.